This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents Simon versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda by Becky Albertalli, performed by Michael Crouch. One. It's a weirdly subtle conversation. I almost don't notice I'm being blackmailed. We're sitting in metal folding chairs backstage, and Martin Addison says, "I read your email." "What?" I look up. "Earlier, in the library?" Not on purpose, obviously.
"You read my email?"
"Well, I used the computer right after you," he says. "And when I typed in Gmail, it pulled up your account. You probably should have logged out."
I stare at him, dumbfounded.
He taps his foot against the leg of his chair. "So, what's the point of the fake name?" he asks.
"Well, I'd say the point of the fake name was to keep people like Martin Addison from knowing my secret identity. So I guess that worked out brilliantly. I guess he must have seen me sitting at the computer. And I guess I'm a monumental idiot." He actually smiles.
"Anyway, I thought it might interest you that my brother is gay."
Not really.
He looks at me.
"What are you trying to say?" I ask.
"Nothing. Look, Spear, I don't have a problem with it. It's just not that big of a deal."
"Except it's a little bit of a disaster, actually. Or possibly an epic fuckstorm of a disaster, depending on whether Martin can keep his mouth shut."
"This is really awkward," Martin says.
I don't even know how to reply.
"Anyway," he says, "it's pretty obvious that you don't want people to know."
I mean, I guess I don't. Except the whole coming out thing doesn't really scare me. I don't think it scares me. It's a giant holy box of awkwardness, and I won't pretend I'm looking forward to it. But it probably wouldn't be the end of the world. Not for me. The problem is, I don't know what it would mean for Blue, if Martin were to tell anyone. The thing about Blue is that he's kind of a private person, the kind of person who wouldn't forget to log out of his email, the kind of person who might never forgive me for being so totally careless. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that I don't know what it would mean for us, for Blue and me. But I seriously can't believe I'm having this conversation with Martin Addison. Of all the people who could have logged into Gmail after me, you have to understand that I never would have used the library computers in the first place, except they blocked the wireless here. And it was one of those days where I couldn't wait until I was home on my laptop. I mean, I couldn't even wait to check it on my phone in the parking lot. Because I had written Blue from my secret account this morning. And it was sort of an important email. I just wanted to see if he had written back.
"I actually think people would be cool about it," Martin says. "You should be who you are."
I don't even know where to begin with that. Some straight kid who barely knows me, advising me on coming out. I kind of have to roll my eyes.
"Okay, well, whatever. I'm not going to show anyone," he says.
For a minute, I'm stupidly relieved. But then it hits me. "Show anyone?" I ask. He blushes and fidgets with the hem of his sleeve. Something about his expression makes my stomach clench.
Did you take a screenshot or something?"
"Well," he says, "I wanted to talk to you about that."
"Sorry, you took a fucking screenshot?"
He purses his lips together and stares over my shoulder.
"Anyway," he says, "I know you're friends with Abby Suzo, so I wanted to ask..."
"Seriously? Or maybe we could go back to you telling me why you took a screenshot of my emails." He pauses.
"I mean, I guess I'm wondering if you want to help me talk to Abby."
I almost laugh.
"So what, you want me to put in a good word for you?"
"Well, yeah," he says. "And why the hell should I do that?" He looks at me, and it suddenly clicks. This Abby thing. This is what he wants from me. This in exchange for not broadcasting my private fucking emails. And Blue's emails. Jesus Christ. I mean, I guess I figured Martin was harmless. A little bit of a goobery nerd, to be honest, but it's not like that's a bad thing. And I've always thought he was kind of hilarious. Except I'm not laughing now. You're actually going to make me do this, I say.
Make you? Come on, it's not like that.
Well, what's it like?
It's not like anything. I mean, I like this girl. I was just thinking you would want to help me here. Invite me to stuff when she'll be there. I don't know.
And what if I don't? You'll put the emails on Facebook? On the fucking Tumblr? Jesus. The Creek Secrets Tumblr. Ground zero for Creekwood High School gossip. The entire school would know within a day. We're both quiet.
I just think we're in a position to help each other out, Martin finally says.
I swallow thickly. Paging Marty, Ms. Albright calls from the stage. Act two, scene three.
So just think about it.
He dismounts his chair. Oh, yeah. I mean, this is so goddamn awesome, I say. He looks at me, and there's this silence. I don't know what the hell you want me to say, I add finally.
Well, whatever,
he shrugs. And I don't think I've ever been so ready for someone to leave. But as his fingers graze the curtains, he turns to me.
Just curious, he says.
Who's Blue?
No one. He lives in California.
If Martin thinks I'm selling out Blue, he's fucking crazy. Blue doesn't live in California. He lives in Shady Creek, and he goes to our school. Blue isn't his real name. He's someone. He may even be someone I know, but I don't know who, and I'm not sure I want to know. And I'm seriously not in the mood to deal with my family. I probably have about an hour until dinner, which means an hour of trying to spin my school day into a string of hilarious anecdotes. My parents are like that. It's like you can't just tell them about your French teacher's obvious wedgie, or Garrett dropping his tray in the cafeteria. You have to perform it. Talking to them is more exhausting than keeping a blog. It's funny, though. I used to love the chatter and chaos before dinner. Now it seems like I can't get out the door fast enough. Today, especially. I stop only long enough to click the leash onto Bieber's collar and get him out the door. I'm trying to lose myself and Tegan and Sarah on my iPod. But I can't stop thinking about Blue and Martin Addison and the holy awfulness of today's rehearsal. So Martin is into Abby. Just like every other geeky straight boy in advanced placement. And really, all he wants is for me to let him tag along when I hang out with her. It doesn't seem like a huge deal when I think about it that way. Except for the fact that he's blackmailing me. And by extension, he's blackmailing Blue. That's the part that makes me want to kick something. But Tegan and Sarah help. Walking to Nick's helps. The air has that crisp, early fall feeling. And people are already lining their steps with pumpkins. I love that. I've loved it since I was a kid. Bieber and I cut around to Nick's backyard and through the basement. There's a massive TV facing the door, on which Templars are being brutalized. Nick and Leah have taken over a pair of rocking video game chairs. They look like they haven't moved all afternoon. Nick pauses the game when I walk in. That's something about Nick. He won't put down a guitar for you, but he'll pause a video game.
Bieber, says Leah.
Within seconds, he perches awkwardly with his butt in her lap, tongue out and leg thumping. He's so freaking shameless around Leah.
No, it's cool. Just greet the dog. Pretend I'm not here.
Aw, do you need me to scratch your ears too?
I crack a smile. This is good. Things are normal. Did you find the traitor? I ask.
Killed him.
He pats the controller. Nice. Seriously, there's no part of me that cares about the welfare of assassins or Templars or any game character ever. But I think I need this. I need the violence of video games and the smell of this basement and the familiarity of Nick and Leah. The rhythm of our speech and silences. The aimlessness of mid-October afternoons.
Simon, Nick hasn't heard about Luigi.
Oh, Luigi, c'est une histoire touchante.
English, please, says Nick. Or pantomime, Leah says. As it turns out, I'm kind of awesome at reenacting epic wedgies. So maybe I do like to perform. A little. I think I'm getting that Nick and Leah sixth grade field trip feeling. I don't know how to explain it. But when it's just the three of us, we have these perfect, stupid moments. Martin Addison doesn't exist in this kind of moment. Secrets don't exist. Stupid. Perfect. Leah rips up a paper straw wrapper, and they're both holding giant styrofoam cups of sweet tea from Chick-fil-A. I actually haven't been to Chick-fil-A for a while. My sister heard they donate money to screw over gay people, and I guess it started to feel weird eating there. Even if their Oreo milkshakes are giant vessels of frothy deliciousness. Not that I can bring that up with Nick and Leah. I don't exactly talk about gay stuff with anyone. Except Blue. Nick takes a swig of his tea and yawns, and Leah immediately tries to launch a little paper wad into his mouth. But Nick clamps his mouth shut, blocking it. She shrugs. Just keep on yawning, sleepyhead. Why are you so tired?
Because I party hard. All night, every night, Nick says.
If by party you mean your calculus homework.
Whatever, Leah.
He leans back, yawning again. This time Leah's paper wad grazes the corner of his mouth. He flicks it back toward her.
So I keep having these weird dreams, he adds.
I raise my eyebrows.
Yikes. TMI? Not that kind of dream.
Leah's whole face goes red.
No, just, Nick says. Like actual weird dreams. Like I dreamed I was in the bathroom putting on my contacts, and I couldn't figure out which lens went in which eye.
Okay, so then what?
Leah's face is buried in the fur on the back of Bieber's neck, and her voice is muffled.
Nothing. I woke up, I put my contacts in like normal, and everything was fine.
That's the most boring dream ever, she says. And then a moment later, isn't that why they label the left and right sides of the containers? Or why people should just wear glasses and stop touching their eyeballs? I sink cross-legged onto the carpet. Bieber slides out of Leah's lap to wander toward me.
And because your glasses make you look like Harry Potter, right, Simon?
One time. I said it once.
Well, I think my unconscious is trying to tell me something.
Nick can be pretty single-minded when he's feeling intellectual.
Obviously, the theme of the dream is vision. What am I not seeing? What are my blind spots?
Your music collection, I suggest. Nick rocks backward in the video game chair and takes another swig of tea.
Did you know Freud interpreted his own dreams when he was developing his theory? And he believed that all dreams are a form of unconscious wish fulfillment.
Leah and I look at each other, and I can tell we're thinking the same thing. It doesn't matter that he's quite possibly talking complete bullshit, because Nick is a little bit irresistible when he's in one of his philosophical moods. Of course, I have a strict policy of not falling for straight guys. At least, not confirmed straight guys. Anyway, I have a policy of not falling for Nick. But Leah has fallen, and it's caused all kinds of problems, especially now that Abby's in the picture. At first, I didn't understand why Leah hated Abby, and asking about it directly got me nowhere.
Oh, she's the best. I mean, she's a cheerleader, and she's so cute and skinny. Doesn't that just make her so amazing?
You have to understand that no one has mastered the art of deadpan delivery like Leah. But eventually I notice Nick switching seats with Bram Greenfeld at lunch. Calculated switching, designed to maximize his odds of sitting near Abby. And then the eyes. The famous Nick Eisner lingering, lovesick eyes. We'd been down that vomit-inducing road before with Amy Everett at the end of freshman year. Though I have to admit there's something fascinating about Nick's nervous intensity when he likes someone. When Leah sees that look pass across Nick's face, she just shuts down.
Which means there's actually one good reason for being Martin Addison's wingman matchmaker bitch.
If Martin and Abby hook up, maybe the Nick problem will just go away. Then Leah can chill the heck out and equilibrium will be restored. So it's not just about me and my secrets. It's hardly about me at all. 2. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, October 17th at 12.06 a.m. Subject, regarding when you knew. That's a pretty sexy story, Blue. I mean, middle school is like this endless horror show. Well, maybe not endless, because it ended, but it really burns into your psyche. I don't care who you are. Puberty is merciless. I'm curious, have you seen him since your dad's wedding? I don't even know when I figured it out. It was a bunch of little things, like this weird dream I had once about Daniel Radcliffe, or how I was obsessed with Passion Pit in middle school, and then I realized it wasn't really about the music. And then in eighth grade, I had this girlfriend. It was one of those things where you're dating, but you don't ever go anywhere outside of school. And you don't really do anything in school either. I think we held hands. So we went to the eighth grade dance as a couple. But my friends and I spent the whole night eating Fritos and spying on people from under the bleachers. And at one point, this random girl comes up to me and tells me my girlfriend is waiting in front of the gym. I was supposed to go out there and find her, and I guess we were supposed to make out. In that closed-mouth middle school way. So here's my proudest moment. I ran and hid like a freaking preschooler in the bathroom. Like in the stall with the door closed, crouched up on the toilet so my legs wouldn't show. As if the girls were going to break in and bust me. Honest to God, I stayed there for the entire evening. And then I never spoke to my girlfriend again. Also, it was Valentine's Day. Because I'm that classy. So yeah, if I'm being completely honest with myself, I definitely knew at that point. Except I've had two other girlfriends since then. Did you know that this is officially the longest email I've ever written? I'm not even kidding. You may actually be the only person who gets more than 140 characters from me. That's kind of awesome, right? Anyway, I think I'll sign off here. Not going to lie. It's been kind of a weird day. Jacques. From bluegreen118@gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, October 17th at 8:46 p.m. Subject, regarding when you knew. I'm the only one? That's definitely kind of awesome. I'm really honored, Jacques. It's funny, because I don't really email either, and I never talk about this stuff with anyone. Only you. For what it's worth, I think it would be incredibly depressing if your actual proudest moment happened in middle school. You can't imagine how much I hated middle school. Remember the way people would look at you blankly and say, okay, after you finished talking? Everyone just had to make it so clear that whatever you were thinking or feeling, you were totally alone. The worst part, of course, was that I did the same thing to other people. It makes me a little nauseated just remembering that. So basically, what I'm trying to say is that you should really give yourself a break. We were all awful then. To answer your question, I've seen him a couple of times since the wedding. Probably twice a year or so. My stepmother seems to have a lot of family reunions and things. He's married, and I think his wife is pregnant now. It's not awkward, exactly, because the whole thing was in my head. It's really amazing, isn't it? Someone can trigger your sexual identity crisis and not have a clue they're doing it. Honestly, he probably still thinks of me as his cousin's weird 12-year-old stepson. So I guess this is the obvious question, but I'll ask it anyway. If you knew you were gay, how did you end up having girlfriends? Sorry about your weird day. Blue. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, October 18th at 11:15 p.m. Subject, regarding when you knew. Blue. Yep, the dreaded, okay, always accompanied by arched eyebrows and a mouth twisted into a condescending little butthole. And yes, I said it too. We all sucked so much in middle school. I guess the girlfriend thing is a little hard to explain. Everything just sort of happened. The eighth grade relationship was a total mess, obviously, so that was different. As for the other two, basically they were friends, and then I found out they liked me, and then we started dating. And then we broke up, and both of them dumped me, and it was all pretty painless. I'm still friends with the girl I dated freshman year. Honestly, though, I think the real reason I had girlfriends was because I didn't 100% believe I was gay. Or maybe I didn't think it was permanent. I know you're probably thinking, okay, Jacques. From bluegreen118@gmail.com to hourtohour.note2note@gmail.com. Date, October 19th at 8:01 a.m. Subject, the obligatory, okay, eyebrows, butthole mouth, etc. Blue. 3. The shittiest thing about the Martin situation is that I can't bring it up with Blue. I'm not used to keeping secrets from him. I mean, there are a lot of things he and I don't tell each other. We talk about all the big things, but avoid the identifying details, the names of our friends, and anything too specific about school. All the stuff that I used to think defined me. But I don't think of those things as secrets. It's more like an unspoken agreement. If Blue were a real junior at Creekwood with a locker and a GPA and a Facebook profile, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be telling him anything. I mean, he is a real junior at Creekwood. I know that. But in a way, he lives in my laptop. It's hard to explain. I was the one who found him. On the Tumblr, of all places. It was August, right when school was starting. Creek Secrets is supposed to be where you can post anonymous confessions and secret random thoughts, and people can comment, but no one really judges you. Except it all kind of devolved into this sinkhole of gossip and bad poetry and misspelled Bible quotes. And I guess it's kind of addictive either way. That's where I found Blue's post. It just kind of spoke to me. And I don't even think it was just the gay thing. I don't know. It was seriously like 5 lines, but it was grammatically correct and strangely poetic, and just completely different from anything I'd ever read before. I guess it was about loneliness. And it's funny, because I don't really think of myself as lonely, but there was something so familiar about the way Blue described the feeling. It was like he had pulled the ideas from my head. Like the way you can memorize someone's gestures but never know their thoughts. And the feeling that people are like houses with vast rooms and tiny windows. The way you can feel so exposed anyway. The way he feels so hidden and so exposed about the fact that he's gay. I felt strangely panicked and self-conscious when I read that part. But there was also this quiet thrum of excitement. He talked about the ocean between people, and how the whole point of everything is to find a shore worth swimming to. I mean, I just had to know him. Eventually, I worked up the courage to post the only comment I could think of, which was, this, all caps. And then I wrote my email address, my secret Gmail account. I spent the next week obsessing about whether or not he would contact me. And then he did. Later, he told me that my comment made him a little nervous. He's really careful about things. Obviously, he is more careful than I am. Basically, if Blue finds out that Martin Addison has screenshots of our emails, I'm pretty sure he'll freak out. But he'll freak out in a totally Blue way. Meaning, he'll stop emailing me. I remember exactly how it felt to see that first message from him in my inbox. It was a little bit surreal. He wanted to know about me. For the next few days at school after that, it felt like I was a character in a movie. I could almost imagine a close-up of my face, projected widescreen. It's strange, because in reality, I'm not the leading guy. Maybe I'm the best friend. I guess I didn't really think of myself as interesting until I was interesting to Blue. So I can't tell him. I'd rather not lose him. I've been avoiding Martin. All week, in class and rehearsal, I see him trying to catch my eye. I know it's kind of cowardly. This whole situation makes me feel like a coward. It's especially stupid because I've already decided I'll help him, or I'll cave to his blackmail,
whatever you want to call it. It honestly makes me feel a little sick. I'm distracted all through dinner. My parents are especially jolly tonight because it's bachelorette night. I'm dead serious, as in the reality show. We all watched the show yesterday, but tonight is the night we Skype with Alice at Wesleyan to discuss it. It's the new Spear family tradition. I could not be more aware that this is perfectly ridiculous. I don't even know. My family's always been like this. "And how are Leo and Nicole?" my dad asks, mouth twitching around the edges of his fork. Switching Leah's and Nick's genders is like the pinnacle of dad humor. "They're amazing," I say. "LOL, Dad," Nora says flatly. My little sister. Recently, she's been using text abbreviations out loud sometimes, even though she never uses them in actual text messages. I think it's supposed to be ironic. She looks at me. "Sai, did you see Nick playing guitar outside the atrium?" "Sounds like Nick's trying to get a girlfriend," says my mom. "That's funny, Mom, because get this. I'm actually trying to prevent Nick from getting the girl he likes so Martin Addison won't tell the whole school I'm gay. Did I mention I'm gay? I mean, how do people even begin with this stuff? Maybe it would be different if we lived in New York, but I don't know how to be gay in Georgia. We're right outside Atlanta, so I know it could be worse. But Shady Creek isn't exactly a progressive paradise. At school, there are one or two guys who are out, and people definitely give them crap. Not like violent crap, but the word fag isn't exactly uncommon. And I guess there are a few lesbian and bisexual girls, but I think it's different for girls. Maybe it's easier. If there's one thing the Tumblr has taught me, it's that a lot of guys consider it hot when a girl is a lesbian. Though, I guess it happens in reverse. There are girls like Leah who do these yaoi pencil sketches and post them to websites. Which I guess is cool with me. Leah's drawings are actually kind of awesome. And Leah's also into slash fan fiction, which got me curious enough to poke around the internet and find some last summer. I couldn't believe how much there was to choose from. Harry Potter and Draco Malfoy hooking up in thousands of ways in every broom closet at Hogwarts. I found the ones with decent grammar and stayed up reading all night. It was a weird couple of weeks. That was the summer I taught myself how to do laundry. There are some socks that shouldn't be washed by your mom. After dinner, Nora sets up Skype on the desktop computer in the living room. In the camera window, Alice looks a little disheveled, but it's probably the hair. Wood blonde and rumpled. All three of us have ridiculous hair. In the background, Alice's bed is unmade and covered with pillows, and someone's purchased a round, shaggy carpet to cover the few feet of floor space. It's still strange to imagine Alice sharing a dorm room with a random girl from Minneapolis. Like, who would have ever guessed I'd see anything sports-related in Alice's room? Minnesota Twins, indeed. "Okay, you're pixelated. I'm going to..." "No, wait, you're good." "Oh my God, Dad, is that a rose?" Our dad is holding a red rose and cackling into the webcam. I'm not even kidding. My family is all freaking business when it comes to the bachelorette. "Simon, do your Chris Harrison imitation." Fact. My Harrison imitation is utter and complete genius. At least, it is under normal circumstances. But I'm not at the top of my game today. I'm just so preoccupied. And it's not just Martin saving the emails. It's the emails themselves. I've been feeling a little strange about the girlfriend thing ever since Blue asked about it. I wonder if he thinks I'm really fake. I get the impression that once he realized he was gay, he didn't date girls. And it was as simple as that. "So, Michael D. claims to have used the fantasy suite for talking," Alice says. "Do we believe that?"
"Not for a minute, kid," Dad replies.
"They always say that," says Nora. She cocks her head, and I just now notice that her ear has 5 piercings, all the way up and around. "Right?" says Alice. "Bub, are you going to weigh in?" "Nora, when did you do that?" I touch my earlobe. She kind of blushes. "Last weekend?" "Let me see," Alice demands. Nora turns her ear toward the webcam.
"Whoa."
"I mean, why?" I ask.
Because I wanted to?
But, like, why so many?
Can we talk about the fantasy suite now? She says.
Nora gets squirmy when the focus is on her. I mean, it's the fantasy suite, I say. They totally did it. I'm pretty sure the fantasy doesn't involve talking.
But that doesn't necessarily mean intercourse.
Mom, Jesus Christ. I guess it was easy being in relationships where I didn't really have to think about all the tiny humiliations that come with being attracted to someone. It's like, I get along well with girls. Kissing them is fine. Dating them was really manageable.
How about Daniel F?
Nora asks, tucking a lock of hair behind her ear.
Seriously, the piercings. I don't get her.
Okay, Daniel F's the hottest one, says Alice. My mom and Alice are always using the phrase eye candy to talk about these people.
Are you kidding me? My dad says. The gay one?
Daniel's not gay, Nora objects.
Kid, he's a one-man pride parade.
An eternal flame. My whole body tenses. Leah once said that she'd rather have people call her fat directly than have to sit there and listen to them talking shit about some other girl's weight. I actually think I agree with that. Nothing is worse than the secret humiliation of being insulted by proxy.
Dad, stop, says Alice. And so Dad starts singing that song Eternal Flame by the Bengals. I never know if my dad says that kind of stuff because he means it, or if he's just trying to push Alice's buttons. I mean, if that's the way he feels, I guess it's good to know. Even if I can't unknow it. So the other issue is the lunch table. It's been less than a week since the blackmail conversation, but Martin intercepts me on my way back from the lunch line.
What do you want, Martin?
He glances at my table.
Room for one more?
I look down. Not really. There's this weird beat of silence. We've got 8 people already.
Didn't realize the seats were assigned.
I don't have a clue what to say to that. People sit where they always sit. I thought that was basically a law of the universe. You can't just switch around the lunch tables in October. And my group is weird, but it works. Nick, Leah, and me. Leah's 2 friends, Morgan and Anna, who read manga and wear black eyeliner, and are basically interchangeable. Anna and I actually dated freshman year, and I still think she and Morgan are interchangeable. Then you have the holy randomness of Nick's soccer friends. Awkward Silence Bram and semi-douche Garrett. And Abby. She moved here from D.C. just before the beginning of the school year, and I guess we were sort of drawn to each other. It was some combination of fate and alphabetical homeroom assignments. Anyway, that's the 8 of us. And it's basically locked down. Already we're squeezing 2 extra chairs into a 6-person table.
Yeah, well...
Martin tilts backward in his chair and looks up at the ceiling.
I just figured we were on the same page here with the Abby thing, but...
Then he raises his eyebrows at me. Seriously. So we haven't exactly laid out the terms of this blackmail arrangement, but clearly it goes something like this. Martin asks for whatever the hell he wants, and then I'm supposed to do it. It's just so fucking awesome.
Look, I want to help you. Whatever you say, Spear.
Listen. I lower my voice, almost to a whisper. I'm gonna talk to her and stuff, okay? But you've gotta let me handle it. He shrugs. I feel his stink eye on me all the way to my table. I have to act normal. It's not like I can say anything. I mean, now I have to say something about him to Abby, I guess. But it'll be the exact opposite of what I want to say. It may be a little hard getting Abby to like this kid, because I kind of can't stand him. I guess that's beside the point now. Except the days keep ticking by, and I still haven't handled it. I haven't talked to Abby, or invited Martin along to crap, or locked them into empty classrooms together. I don't even know what he wants, honestly. I'm kind of hoping to avoid finding out for as long as humanly possible. I guess I've been doing a lot of disappearing. Or glomming onto Nick and Leah so Martin won't try to talk to me.
I pull into the parking lot on Tuesday, and Nora hops out. But when I don't follow, she pokes her head back inside.
Are you coming?
Eventually, I say.
All right.
She pauses.
Are you okay?
What? Yeah. She looks at me. Nora, I'm fine.
Okay,
she says, stepping back. She shuts the door with a soft click and heads toward the entrance. I don't know. Nora's weirdly observant sometimes, but talking to her about stuff can be kind of awkward. I never really noticed it until Alice left for school. I end up playing around on my phone, refreshing my email and watching music videos on YouTube. But there's a knock on the passenger side window, and I almost jump. I think I started expecting to see Martin everywhere. Except it's just Nick. I gesture through the window for him to come in. He climbs into the seat.
What are you doing?
Avoiding Martin? Watching videos, I say.
Oh man, perfect. I've got this song in my head.
If it's by The Who, I inform him, or Def Skynyrd or anyone like that, then no freaking way.
I'm going to pretend you didn't just say Def Skynyrd.
I love messing with Nick. We end up watching part of an episode of Adventure Time as a compromise, and it's the exact perfect distraction. I keep an eye on the clock because I don't actually want to miss English class. I just want to cut off that margin of time before class begins where Martin might try to talk to me. And it's funny. I know Nick can tell something's up with me, but he doesn't ask questions or try to make me talk. It's just one of those things about us. I know his voice and expressions and his weird little habits, his random existential monologues, the way he taps his fingertips along the pad of his thumb when he's nervous. And I guess he probably knows the same kinds of things about me. I mean, we've known each other since we were 4. But really, I don't have a clue what goes on inside his head most of the time. It actually reminds me a lot of the thing Blue posted on the Tumblr. Nick takes my phone and starts scrolling through the videos.
If we can find one with Christ imagery, we can totally justify skipping English.
If we find Christ imagery, I'm using Adventure Time for my free response essay. He looks at me and laughs. The thing is, it isn't lonely with Nick. It's just easy. So maybe it's a good thing. I'm a little early for Thursday's rehearsal, so I slip out the side door of the auditorium and walk around to the back of the school. It's actually pretty chilly for Georgia, and it looks like it rains sometime after lunch. Really, though, there are only two kinds of weather. Hoodie weather and weather where you wear a hoodie anyway. I must have left my earbuds and my backpack in the auditorium. I hate listening to stuff through the speakers of my phone, but music is always better than no music. I lean against the brick wall behind the cafeteria, searching my music library for an EP by Lita. I haven't listened to it yet, but the fact that Leah and Anna are obsessed is a promising sign. Suddenly, I'm not alone.
Okay, Spear, what's your deal?
Martin asks, sliding up beside me against the wall.
My deal?
I think you're avoiding me. We're both wearing Chucks, and I can't decide if my feet look small or if his look huge. Martin probably has 6 inches on me. Our shadows look ridiculous next to each other.
Well, I'm not, I say.
I step off the wall and start walking back toward the auditorium. I mean, I'm not trying to piss off Ms. Albright. Martin catches up to me.
Seriously, he says. I'm not going to show anyone the emails, okay? Stop freaking out about it.
But I think I'll take that with about 1,000,000 fucking grains of salt, because he sure as hell didn't say he was deleting them. He looks at me, and I can't quite read his expression. It's funny. All the years I've been in class with this kid, laughing along with everyone at the random shit he says, all the times I've seen him in plays, we even sat next to each other in choir for a year. But really, I barely know him. I guess I don't know him at all. Never in my life have I underestimated someone so severely.
I said I was going to talk to her, I say finally. Okay?
My hands are on the auditorium door.
Wait, he says.
I look up at him, and he's holding his phone.
Would it be easier if we exchanged numbers?
Do I have a choice?
I mean... He shrugs. Jesus Christ, Martin. I grab his phone, and my hands are practically vibrating with total fury as I punch my number into his contacts.
Awesome. And I'll just call you so you have mine.
Whatever. Fucking Martin Addison. I'm definitely putting him in my contacts as Monkey's asshole. I push through the door, and Ms. Albright hears us on stage. All right, I need Fagin, Dodger, Oliver, and boys. Act 1, scene 6. Let's go.
Simon!
Abby flings her arms around me, and then pokes me in the cheeks.
Never leave me again.
What did I miss? I kind of force a smile.
Nothing, she says under her breath. But I'm in Taylor Hell here.
The blondest circle of hell. Taylor Metternich. She's the worst kind of perfect. Like if perfection had a dark side. I don't know how else to explain it. I always imagine her sitting in front of a mirror at night, counting strokes as she brushes her hair. And she's the kind of person who posts on Facebook asking you how you did on the history quiz, not to be supportive. She wants to know your grade. Okay, boys, says Ms. Albright. Hilarious, because Martin, Cal Price, and I are the only ones on stage who technically qualify. Bear with me, because we're going to do some blocking. She combs her bangs out of her eyes and tucks them behind her ear. Ms. Albright is really young for a teacher, and she has bright red hair. Like electric red.
Act 1, scene 6 is the pickpocket scene, right?
Asks Taylor, because she's also the kind of person who pretends to ask a question just to show off what she already knows.
Right, Ms. Albright says. Take it away, Cal.
Cal is the stage manager. He's a junior like me, and he carries a double-spaced copy of the script clipped into a giant blue binder, exploding with pencil notes. It's funny that his job is basically to order us around and be stressed out, because he's the least authoritative person I've ever met. He's a little bit soft-spoken, and he has an actual southern accent, which is something you almost never hear in Atlanta, really. He also has those kind of shaggy brown bangs I like, and dark, ocean-colored eyes. I haven't heard anything about him being gay, but there's this kind of vibe I get, maybe.
All right, says Ms. Albright. Dodger has just befriended Oliver, and he's bringing him back to the hideout for the first time to meet Fagin and the boys. So, what's your objective?
To show him who's boss? Says Emily Goff.
Maybe to mess with him a little? Says Mila Odom.
You got it. He's the new guy, and you're not going to make it easy for him. He's a nerd. You want to intimidate him and steal his crap. That makes a couple of people laugh. Ms. Albright is moderately badass for a teacher. She and Cal put us into position. Ms. Albright calls it setting the tableau. They want me lying down, propped up by my elbows on a platform, tossing a little coin bag. When Dodger and Oliver enter, all of us are supposed to jump up and make a grab for Oliver's satchel. I have the idea to stuff it under my shirt and stagger around the stage with my hand on my lower back like I'm pregnant. Ms. Albright totally loves it. Everyone laughs, and honest to God, this is the absolute best kind of moment. The auditorium lights are off, except for the ones over the stage, and we're all bright-eyed and giggle-drunk. I fall a little bit in love with everyone. Even Taylor. Even Martin. He smiles at me when he catches my eye, and I really just have to grin back at him. He's such a freaking asswipe, seriously. But he's just so gangly and fidgety and ridiculous. It takes some of the passion out of hating him. So yeah, I'm not going to write a poem in his honor, and I don't know what he expects me to say to Abby. No clue. But I guess I'll think of something. Rehearsal ends, but Abby and I dangle our feet off the edge of one of the platforms, watching Ms. Albright and Cal make notes in the big blue binder. The South County late bus doesn't leave for another 15 minutes, and then it's another hour until Abby gets home. She and most of the other black kids spend more time commuting to school each day than I do in a week. Atlanta is so weirdly segregated, and no one ever talks about it. She yawns and leans back flat on the platform with one arm tucked behind her head.
She's wearing tights and one of those short pattern dresses. And her left wrist is loaded with woven friendship bracelets. Martin sits across the stage, a few feet away, zipping his backpack so slowly it must be deliberate. He seems to be making a point of not looking at us. Abby's eyes are closed. She has the kind of mouth that always rests in a faint smile, and she smells a little like French toast. If I were straight, the Abby thing, I do think I get it. "Hey, Martin," I say, and my voice sounds strange. He looks up at me. "Are you going to Garrett's tomorrow?"
He says. "Like a party?"
"It's a Halloween party. You should come. I'll send you the address." Just a quick text to Monkey's asshole.
"Yeah, maybe," he says.
He leans forward and stands, and immediately trips over his shoelace. Then he tries to play it off like some kind of dance move. Abby laughs, and he grins. And I'm not even kidding, he actually takes a bow. I mean, I don't even know what to say to that. I guess there's this hazy middle ground between laughing at someone and laughing with someone. I'm pretty sure that middle ground is Martin. Abby turns her head to look at me. "Didn't know you were friends with Marty," she says. Which is just about the most hilarious fucking statement ever. 4. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, October 30th at 9:56 p.m. Subject, regarding Halloweeners. Blue. I guess I never tried to pull off something truly scary. My family is really all about the funny costumes. We used to get competitive about whose costume would make my dad laugh the hardest. My sister was a trash can one year. Not Oscar the Grouch, just a trash can full of trash. And I was pretty much a one-trick pony. The boy in a dress concept never got old. Until it did, I guess. I was in fourth grade and I had this amazing flapper costume, but then I looked in the mirror and felt this electric shock of mortification. Now, I'll say I aim for the sweet spot of simplicity and badassery. "I can't believe you're not dressing up. Don't you realize you're throwing away the perfect opportunity to be someone else for an evening?" Disappointedly yours, Jacques. From bluegreen118@gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, October 31st at 8:11 a.m. Subject, regarding Halloweeners. Jacques. "Sorry to disappoint. I'm not opposed to dressing up, and you make a compelling case for it. I completely see the appeal of being someone else for the evening, or in general. Actually, I was a bit of a one-trick pony myself when I was little. I was always a superhero. I guess I'd like to imagine myself having this complicated secret identity. Maybe I still do. Maybe that's the whole point of these emails. Anyway, I'm not dressing up this year, because I'm not going out. My mom has some kind of work party, so I'm stuck at home on chocolate duty. I'm sure you understand that there's nothing sadder than a 16-year-old boy home alone on Halloween answering the door in full costume. Your family sounds interesting. How did you talk your parents into buying you dresses? I bet you were an awesome flapper. Did your parents try to ruin all your costumes by making them weather appropriate? I remember throwing this ridiculous tantrum one year because the Green Lantern does not wear a turtleneck. Though in retrospect, he actually kind of does. Sorry, Mom. Anyway, I hope you enjoy your day off from being Jacques. And I hope everyone likes your ninja costume. That has to be it, right? The perfect mix of simple and badass? Blue. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, October 31st at 8:25 a.m. Subject, regarding Halloweeners. A ninja? Suck a good guess, but no dice. Jacques. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, October 31st at 8:26 a.m.
Subject, regarding Halloweeners. Autocorrect fail. Dick, a good guess.
From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date October 31st at 8:28 a.m. Subject, regarding Halloweeners.
Such a good guess. Such. Jesus Christ. This is why I never write you from my phone. Anyway, I'm going to die of embarrassment now. J. 5. Honest to God, there is nothing better than Halloween on a Friday. All day in school, there's a kind of charged feeling, and it seems to make the work less boring and the teachers funnier. I've got felt cat ears duct taped to my hoodie and a tail pinned to the butt of my jeans, and kids I don't know are giving me smiles in the hallways, laughing in a nice way. It's just an awesome day. Abby comes home with me, and we'll walk over to Nick's later so Leah can pick us all up. Leah's already 17, which makes a difference in Georgia with your license. I can drive one person at a time besides Nora right now, and that's the end of the story. My parents aren't strict about a lot of things, but they're evil, mad dictators when it comes to driving. Abby collapses to the floor to cuddle with Bieber as soon as we walk into the kitchen. She and Leah may not have much in common, but they're both obsessed with my dog. And Bieber is now lying pathetically on his back, belly exposed, staring up at Abby dreamily. Bieber is a golden retriever, and he has these big brown, kind of manic eyes. Alice was way too pleased with herself when she came up with his name, but I'm not going to lie. It seriously fits. "So where is this thing?" Abby asks, looking up at me. She and Bieber are intertwined in an eternity embrace, her headband sliding down over her eyes. A lot of people did the toned-down school version of Halloween today, animal ears and masks and things like that. Abby showed up wearing a full-on, head-to-toe Cleopatra costume. Garrett's house? Somewhere off Roswell Road, I think? Nick knows. So it's going to be mostly soccer people? Probably, I don't know, I say. I mean, I did get a text from Monkey's asshole confirming he'd be there, but I don't feel like bringing him into the conversation. Well, whatever. It'll be fun. She tries to extract herself from the dog, and her costume rides almost all the way up her thigh. She does have tights on, but really, I guess it's funny. As far as I know, everyone thinks of me as straight. But already Abby seems to have figured out that she doesn't have to be self-conscious around me. But maybe that's just how she is. "Hey, are you hungry?" she asks, and I realize I'm supposed to have offered her something. We end up cooking grilled cheese in the toaster oven and bringing it into the living room to eat in front of the TV. Nora is tucked into her corner of the couch reading Macbeth. I guess that's kind of Halloweenish. Nora never really goes out. I catch her eyeing our sandwiches, and then she slides off the couch to make one for herself. I mean, if she wanted grilled cheese, she really should have just told me. Our mom gives Nora crap about being more assertive, though I guess I could have asked if she was hungry. I have a hard time getting into other people's heads sometimes. It's probably the worst thing about me. We watch some random shows on Bravo with Bieber stretched between us on the couch. Nora comes in with her sandwich and goes back to reading. Alice, Nora, and I tend to do our work in front of the TV or with music playing, but we all get good grades regardless. "Hey, we better get dressed, right?" Abby says. Abby has an entirely different costume for the party, because by now everyone has seen Cleopatra. "We don't have to be at Nick's until 8. "But don't you want to dress up for the trick-or-treaters?" she says. "I always hated it when people weren't in costume." If you say so. But I promise you, the kids here are all about the candy, and they seriously don't care where it comes from. "That's a little concerning," says Abby. I laugh. "Yeah, it is." "Okay, well, I'm taking over your bathroom now. Time for the transformation." "Sounds good," I say. "I'll transform in here." Nora looks up from her book. "Simon, ew. It's a Dementor robe over my clothes. I think you'll survive." "What's a Dementor?" I mean, I can't even. "Nora, you are no longer my sister." "So it's some Harry Potter thing," she says.
Garrett bumps fists with Nick when we walk in. Eisner, what is up? And there's this throb of music and random bursts of laughter and people holding cans that aren't Coke. Already I'm feeling a little out of my depth. So here's the thing. I'm used to the other kind of party. The kind where you get to someone's house and their mom shows you down to the basement and there's junk food and apples to apples and a bunch of people randomly singing. Maybe some people playing video games. So, what can I get you to drink? Garrett asks. We have beer and, vodka and rum.
Yeah, thanks, no, says Leah. I drove.
Oh, well, we have Cokes and juice and stuff.
I'll have a vodka with orange juice, says Abby.
Leah shakes her head. A screwdriver for Wonder Woman coming right up. Eisner, Spear, anything? Can I get you a beer?
Sure, I say. My heart is doing some noticeable thumping.
Spear a beer, Garrett says,
and then he laughs. I guess because it rhymes.
He disappears to get us drinks, which my mom would probably say is really excellent hosting. Not that there's any way in holy hell I'm telling my parents about the alcohol. They would be too goddamn amused. I pull my Dementor hood over my head and lean against the wall. Nick has gone upstairs to get Garrett's dad's guitar, so it's that weird, quiet tension of being alone with Abby and Leah. Abby sings along under her breath to the music and kind of shimmies her shoulders. I feel myself kind of shrinking toward Leah. Sometimes I just know she's feeling the exact way I am. Leah looks at the couch.
Wow, is that Katniss making out with Yoda?
Who making out with who? Says Abby. There's this pause.
Yeah, forget it, says Leah.
I think Leah gets extra sarcastic when she's nervous, but Abby never seems to notice that edge in her voice.
Where the heck is Nick? She asks.
Just hearing Abby say Nick's name makes Leah suck in her lips. Feeling up a guitar somewhere? I suggest.
Yeah, says Leah. Most awkward way ever to get a splinter.
Which sets Abby off giggling. Leah looks kind of flushed and pleased with herself.
It's the weirdest thing.
There are these moments with Abby and Leah where it honestly just seems like they're showing off for each other. But then Garrett walks over with an armload of drinks, and something in Leah's expression slams shut.
All right, screwdrivers for the ladies, Garrett says, handing one to each of them.
This is... okay, says Leah,
rolling her eyes and leaving the drink on the table behind her.
And a beer for whatever the hell you're supposed to be.
A Dementor, I say.
What in God's holy name is that?
A Dementor from Harry Potter?
Well, put your hood back for the love of Jesus. And who are you supposed to be?
Kim Kardashian, says Leah, just completely deadpan.
Garrett looks confused.
Toru from Fruits Basket.
It's
a manga, she says.
Ah.
There's a crash of dissonant piano notes from across the room, and Garrett's eyes skate past us. A couple of girls are sitting on the piano bench, and I guess one of them knocked her elbow into the keys. There's this burst of wild, drunk laughter. And I almost wish I were home with Nora, watching Bravo and listening for the door and stuffing my face with fun-size Kit Kats, which, for the record, are way less fun than full-size Kit Kats. I don't know. It's not that I'm having a bad time exactly, but being here feels strange. I take a sip of my beer, and it's just astonishingly disgusting. I don't think I was expecting it to taste like ice cream, but holy fucking hell. People lie and get fake IDs and sneak into bars, and for this, I honestly think I'd rather make out with Bieber. The dog. Or Justin. Anyway, it really makes you worry about all the hype surrounding sex. Garrett leaves Nick's drink with us and joins the girls at the piano. I think they're freshmen. Their costumes are surprisingly clever. One of them is wearing a black silk nightgown with a picture of Freud's face taped to the front. A Freudian slip. Nick will like that. But they're Nora's age. I can't believe they're drinking. Garrett quickly pulls down the lid over the piano keys,
and the fact that he's worried about the piano makes me like him better. "There you are," says Abby. Nick is